Got open man, DJ Moore, end zone, touchdown, touchdown Bears.
I am Jeff Joniak.
Blitz is on, down he goes, Husker.
What was it like playing for Coach Ditka?
I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Pressure coming, he's in big trouble, down he goes, Montez Sweat.
No way.
Now, Bears Etc. brought to you by Miller Lite with the voices of the Bears, Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer.
April equals draft equals Bears are getting a brand new quarterback. Bears are going to be better in 2024. It's such a great moment in franchise history, if you ask me. The unprecedented intersection of year three of a roster rebuild, the anticipation of a unique, gifted quarterback. With the number one overall pick in the draft, a year deep in the tenure of President and CEO Kevin Warren, who is reimagining the business of the Bears and closing in on a new domed multi-use stadium in Chicago, and a GM who is bold, calm, and precise in his direction. Fellas, a lot of meat on the bone, and we're going to start tearing it off today with our buddy, with Tom Thayer. I'm Jeff Joniak, and our sideline reporter and head football coach at Carmel High School in North Suburban Chicago, former Chicago Bears fullback J-Mac, Jason McKee, joining us as we roll out episode 62 of the Bears Etc. podcast, and this episode brought to you by Miller Lite. First of all, Tom, good day. J-Mac, thanks for the call from the bullpen. We needed a lefty, so we went to the fullback.
No, I appreciate you having me, man. Jeff, you're good, man. And I wonder you're the voice of the Bears, man. The intro that you have, you're good, man. And obviously, Tom is, Tom's the man on the broadcast. So, you know, it's been a joy to be with you guys. It's been a great journey, just especially getting to build a relationship with you guys, you know, outside of, you know, off the field. And I know you guys have covered me for a long time when I played, but it's been cool to be a part of the family. You know, we got a great group, and I'm looking forward to this season. You know, I think it's going to keep getting better and better.
J-Mac, that introduction that Jeff gave, I thought he was giving the introduction about you for what you mean to the Carmel Corsairs. And so I was going, wow, Jeff, that's one heck of a build-up. And I know J-Mac is not on with us enough.
Right.
But, you know, he is all those descriptions that you gave for his football program at the Carmel Mundelein program.
You know, he's a multiplier. J-Mac's a multiplier. Right. Hey, because not only was he a hell of a football player, he was a nasty football player. I did some research here real quick because I forgot. You were listed at 5'11", 247 when you were a football player in the NFL. I don't know if that weight wavered one pound or another here and there.
They didn't want to put backs at 260 at that time, so they let him be 47.
Right. I'm trying to get back there, man. I need to get back on that Rusty Jones plan, man. Too many vacations and too many Krispy Kreme donuts, man. Like, it's been crazy. But, yeah, man, it was good times, obviously, you know, playing with the Bears. And, you know, it's exciting times. I know we're going to talk about. You know, I know you're going to talk about Devin coming up, and yeah. It's just exciting to see how many Bears going into Hall of Fame this year. We got the number one pick. We've got the number ninth pick in the draft. It's just exciting to be, you know, a Bears fan right now.
Let me ask you this, though, real quick. Let me ask you, Tom and Jason, did that intro, as you listen to it, because it gave me goosebumps, because we're at a really significant moment in franchise history, 105 years. I know there have been bigger moments, of course, but for everything like this that's building, did that give you guys a little pause? Tommy, start off.
You know what? All right, Jeff, so I'm going to be 63 years old in August. I've grown up here my whole life. I've been a Chicago Bears fan my whole life. I went to watch games at Soldier Field my whole life. I know what the Bears were about before the inception of the football networks that you could watch every game every week, and everybody that lived here was a Bears fan. That's what I want to see us get back to.
Yep.
I want to see us get back where this younger community of kids and sports supporters are back to being a Bears loyalist. And so when you gave that initial description of the show today and what Kevin Warren is going to do for the Chicago Bears, that's what I want to see. And that's 60 years of Bear experience in a franchise that's a little over 100 years old.
Yeah, I'm just excited at the fact that, you know, the funny thing is, like, we weren't a playoff team last year, but because of the offseason, like, we're still at the forefront of every conversation when you're talking about the NFL, you're talking about the draft. Everything starts with the Bears. And, you know, like Tom said, to to have this much excitement, to be where we're at as with as an organization, to have, you know, the first and the ninth pick and to have momentum coming back, it's just real exciting times. And I'm real excited to see if, you know, Coach Flews and Poles can make sure they put together this right formula, the right process to get us back, you know, into the playoffs where we're supposed to be.
Here's something funny. Tom mentioned 63 years old. I'm 61, butting my head on the ceiling of 62. And I noticed that J-Mac's got a birthday next month, May 22nd, 1980, the day I graduated from Hersey High School.
Oh, my goodness.
J-Mac was born. Look
that
at the man.
My freshman year in college.
Look at the man he's become. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
For again, man, because I've got to listen to, you know, we had morning workouts this morning, and every day, like, we have a kid come up to me, and he's like, hey, you know what? My dad used to watch you when he was growing up, or my dad watched you playing the Super Bowl. I'm like, man, I'm really old now. I'm coaching this guy's son. But it was great times. It's great to be a part of this organization. You know, I love the city of Chicago. That's why I stayed here. That's why so many of my teammates have stayed here. I know Thayer has a lot of his teammates that stayed here as well. It's such a great town to be in, such a great organization to be a part of, the city of Chicago and the Bears.
J-Mac, I know that we're going to talk about Devin, and he's but the position you played fullback, and now you're coaching high school football. Because you played the position of fullback, do you find a need to have a fullback in your system, or do you kind of look at the variations of offensive systems that we're seeing today in high school, college, and pro that maybe your position, even to you, is not the same as it is to other coaches?
Yeah, it's funny with high school. It's like, you know, you're in our case, our scheme really has to be predicated on our personnel. My first 2 years here, we didn't have a fullback or a kid that had a fullback body or had that mentality to be able to go in there and take on linebackers or even defensive ends if he had to. So my first 2 years were mainly a spread team. Last year we had a fullback who ran some 21 personnel, and we just had one tight end. So it was mainly 21 personnel, 11 personnel, you know, one back and one tight end. But this year, it's crazy because I have some young kids coming up, and I actually have four tight ends and a fullback. So I'm real excited. You know, we meet every Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday. We talk scheme. We've been making variations of our scheme. So we're gonna be real complex this year. We're going to have, you know, two tight end sets. We can go 12 personnel. We can go 21 personnel with a traditional fullback like I was. So the sky's the limit when you have the personnel in which you can, you know, call a different lot of personnel groupings. You get in a lot of different formations, and it puts a lot of stress on our defense. So, you know, we want to be simply complex. We want to look complex, but we want to make sure we keep our scheme simple so that way our kids understand it.
Tom, we let the man down a year ago. We're a team, man. And this group that we have broadcasting Bears games for 28 years, overall, the crew hasn't changed much. Some characters have developed over time, and we got to get out and support Carmel this fall.
We will.
You got to circle a game where Tommy and I, are we allowed to stand on the sideline? That's the big key.
100%, man. Cap,
I want to watch you guys work.
Hey, Cap came out to our playoff game last year. Cap, I had Cap right on the sideline. I even walked up to Cap, and we were fortunate enough to be ahead in the game where I could kind of joke around and not be really stressed out as a head coach, you know, worried about managing the game. I said, hey, Cap, you know, I showed him my call sheet. I said, what play you want to run? You know, so Cap, you know, he was on the sideline with Nolan and Rasheed, and he got to see us, you know, interact as coaches. And I know he's seen us play as players, but it's a lot different, you know, being out there, being with the kids coaching. So it was good to have Cap support. And you guys always support me. You guys always talk about Carmel on the broadcast, and I appreciate that. So you guys are busy. You guys are the tip of the spear. So whenever you can make it out, you know, I got to pull Thayer from his alma mater.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Yeah, and it's got to be a mild weather night too. It can't be a cold night for Tom.
I'm all for all local high school sports, men, women. I just think it's super exciting. So, but obviously, if Mount Carmel and Joliet Catholic do meet up along the way, I got to wear my brown and gold as you wear your brown and gold.
Tom, if you had the opportunity to pick a play off the call sheet, maybe it's not on there. What would you give me, J-Mac, your favorite play call?
57 power. That's what Joliet Catholic system is built on. It's a play that we've been running since I've been at Joliet Catholic, and the name of my brother's tavern that was combined to the to the restaurant was 30 buck. And that's a famous fullback play. And if there's anybody that ever should be running a 30 buck, it should be Jason McKee and the Mount Carmel Corsairs.
I love it.
Put it in. Tastes like Miller time. Go to MillerLite.com/BearsPod to find delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Episode 62 of the Bears Etc. podcast. Our guest, Jason McKee, otherwise known as J-Mac. He's a man of many talents. Before we get into what we want to talk about the Bears, though, a little bit more about you, because you got young men you're influencing in a way that parents can't. Teachers can't. It's a different ball game when you're talking about, and it doesn't matter what the sport is, but football, we all know, you know, it makes a man out of you in many ways. Maturity is necessary for you to survive, even in a high school setting. So you not only were a hell of a football player and you made it to the big stage in the National Football League for multiple teams, but as a high school star growing up in Gulf Breeze, Florida, you were also a 5A state champion wrestler. And also, this is something I didn't know, in the 238-pound weight class, the Florida Class 5A state champion weightlifter. So do you let those guys know that, hey, I've done this? I lived in the weight room too. Or do they not need that? They could just look at you and see you're all jacked up.
Man, believe it or not, like, we're blessed at Carmel. We have a phenomenal weight room. We have an 18-rack state-of-the-art weight room. Everything's Corsair branded, all on our plates, our benches that we have. And, you know, our kids, they've really owned the offseason. I think that's been the biggest change in our program. You know, when I first came to Carmel, we had kids that would walk past the weight room, and I had to go chase them to drag them in the weight room. Now we got kids that want to bring a sleeping bag in the weight room.
Wow.
Which is awesome.
Is that true? Is that true, literally?
Yeah, I mean, guys want to stay, and they want to, you know, we have our lifting time, but now they want to lift with the soccer team. They want to lift with the volleyball team. They want to come in before school and lift. So they understand that, you know, right now is a time in which you've got to outwork the competition. Like, if you want to have a competitive edge at the high school level, you've got to put in the work in, you know, not just our program. All these schools are working out right now. You know, Tom's alma mater, they're working out right now. We're working out, but we've got to find ways within the rules to gain a competitive edge, so that way when we take the field on Friday night, we've outworked the competition. We put in more work than our opponent. And that's what it's been. You know, our guys understand that, you know, yes, I was a state championship weightlifter, but, you know, I had to really, you know, place an emphasis and teach our guys that, you know, games are won and lost in the weight room. Games are won and lost in the offseason. And you can tell, you know, that first Friday night when that ball's kicked off, You can't hide it. You can tell the teams that put in the work and the teams that didn't.
Tom, that's music to your ears. You know, you're preaching it right now at the NFL level. With the new NFL rules and off-season programs, some off-season programs actually started today or yesterday, one of the two. And it is about the weight room. It's about the weight room. And, you know, you get agents involved and, hey, you know, I want you to work with trainer X, Y, and Z, or we're going to try different things, but there's nothing like the iron, baby. Nothing like right. The iron.
You know, before the escape of the cell phone, the greatest development of camaraderie and confidence was the weight room. And as Jason talks about the kids wanting to be in there, that's the same way it was during my time with the Bears. And it was, whether it's I'm encouraging another guy to become stronger, to work harder, or be better, because really it helps the whole team. But we were an unbelievable close team because everybody hung out in the weight room. And nowadays, it's where can I escape to check out my phone, look at social media, call someone outside the building that doesn't factor inside the building. And that's one of the things that makes me sad about the NFL and about sports is the lack of teamwork inside the weight room. In pushing yourself to be as strong as you can possibly be, rather than being controlled by a guy who, a person, a coach that only wants you to do exercises and not gain strength.
Interesting development over the course of time in the National Football League. One last thing about Jason's career. 80-yard touchdown run against Navy. Did you run out of gas?
No, I actually didn't. You know, believe it or not, I tell everybody, people are like, yeah, right, because when I came in the league, you know, I came out with the Philadelphia Eagles. I was only like 220, 225.
And oh, no kidding.
The Eagles, you know, I used to be fast. I'm telling you, I was fast. I could run in high school. I was, you know, I was at Temple. I played, you know, both fullback and tailback. So I had speed, but as I gained weight, that speed deteriorated. And then I didn't really, you know, I didn't work on speed as much because I'm like, hey, I'm playing fullback. I'm the most I'm going to, you know, 10 yards. I may have to run, you know, 20 yards down the field and pick up the running back. So, you know, I started working on more explosion and power because I was going to do a lot more blocking. But no, I didn't run out of gas. And the funny thing is, on that Navy team, Sean McGee, who just left the Bears and went to Michigan, he was on that Navy team that we played. So he actually reminded me of that game this year on the sideline before we called the game.
That's awesome. Well, you know, hey, when you were blocking for Thomas Jones, you had to love that because of his attitude as a runner. And a guy who also appreciates the weight room probably to this day now that he's on this, he's on the big screen. He does a lot of television and movies. And then Matt Forte, the franchise rookie record for rushing. You know, you're leading the way there. And what a great time to be a Chicago Bear, which transitions into 2006, that year that you became the full-time starter at fullback. A guy from the University of Miami lands. And probably had as much to do with the Bears getting to the Super Bowl as anybody. It reminds me of the Cleveland Browns in 1964. Obviously, I was just a tyke, but reading about it, Paul Warfield, a Hall of Fame receiver, much of his career with the Miami Dolphins, that was a big reason they won the NFL championship that year because that put him over the top. I think Devin Hester probably put that team over the top, and you become lifelong friends with Devin and his family. You guys recently spent a vacation together with a bunch of other former Bears. Where is he at right now as we transition into our ChicagoBears.com five-part series on the Hall of Famers to be inducted coming up August at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. That includes the great Steve McMichael and a former Bear, Julius Peppers. So give us some insight on where his head is at right now and what he's thinking about.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned I had the opportunity every year we go on family vacation. So it's you know, my family, his family. And this year, Corey Graham, I know you guys remember. Yep. Corey played with us with the Bears. He went with us as well. We were down in Tulum, Mexico. And, you know, Devin right now, I think he's relieved that he finally got in. But I think he's really excited. And I think there's still some shock still, you know, within him. And, you know, we just talked about the whole time, you know, he's playing his Super Bowl party. So we have a group thread with a bunch of former Bears on it. And, you know, Devin sends out, hey, make sure you guys send me your email so I can send you the itinerary for the party and stuff like that. So I think he's feeling all of those emotions. You know, he's real excited. I think he's real excited at being able to, you know, cherish this opportunity and spend this opportunity with his teammates. A lot of guys that helped him get to the Hall of Fame. So he wants to make sure that, you know, his guys are there and are able to celebrate this moment with him. So us as, you know, as players and as teammates and friends, like, you know, I'm overjoyed for him. I'm real excited. You know, I still call him probably every other day and call him and say, hey, man, you know, you're going into the Hall of Fame, dude. Like, you're going into the Hall of Fame. And typical Devin, you know, he's like, I know, man. He'll start laughing. Like, it's surreal just to see, you know, where he's come from, you know, like you said, back in 06 when he came into our locker room as a rookie, and you knew that the talent that he had was undeniable, but to see what he was able to do throughout the course of his career and, you know, you being right there in that moment. And at that time, you're like, you're not thinking about him going into the Hall of Fame. You're just amazed at his talent and what he's able to do each and every Sunday. And then to, you know, have him finish his career and to see the body of work that he put together and that being, you know, that body of work ending in the Hall of Fame in Canton. So, you know, right now he's going through the process. He's been back and forth to Canton. You know, they've been sizing his jacket, getting his bus. And he told me that his bus is going to have dreads. So I asked him that. I said, hey, is your bus? Because, you know, he doesn't have the dreads no more. He has a low cut. But I said, hey, is your bus going to have dreads? He's like, oh, yeah, it's going to have dreads. So, you know, he's been getting his jacket and stuff like that sized up. And they've got a bunch of activities in which, you know, the Hall of Famers, they fly to Canton and they have a whole itinerary that they do leading up to the Hall of Fame. But he's just going through the process. And I know he's real excited. He's humble. And I know he's real thankful, you know, for his teammates that helped him get there.
You know, Jason, the general manager then, Jerry Angelo, he always used to have the saying, measure twice and cut once. And so when you think about Devin Hester, and he's basically being considered at four different positions, when you think of a punt returner, a kick returner, a defensive back, and a wide receiver. Did you ever see the disappointment in him and not being able to identify the position outside of being a Hall of Fame returner? Or was that never in question because he was a Hall of Fame returner?
Yeah, I think the disappointment came, you know, there were a lot of times when, you know, he was just a kick returner or a punt returner that he wanted to help. He wanted to contribute more. And he wanted to contribute on the offensive side of the ball in terms of that receiver. And you can see that, you know, Coach Turner and those different coordinators that we had would try to, you know, implement ways to get him involved, whether it was on a reverse or a quick screen, just to get the ball out to Devin so he can use his speed and his ability in space. But, you know, Devin, I think he really felt like he could have really affected the game at receiver, given that opportunity to be a full-time receiver. So I think the disappointment that he has is he couldn't help us more. Even though he did in terms of special teams, I think he, you know, Devin's a guy, he's a team guy, so he wants to, you know, leave his footprint on the game any way he can. And I think his biggest disappointment was he wasn't able to do that more as a, you know, full-time receiver.
And, you know, when I met with him in Orlando before the Tampa game last season, that was a big topic. He was a man without a position. And no one at any level could figure out how best to use Devin Hester outside of the return game. But I think his heart was at corner, and he wanted to play corner. Lovie Smith, hey, man, big guy, we got to put the ball in your hand, so we're gonna use you at wide receiver, which then you fast forward to today, 18 years later, Tom. Can you imagine him as a weapon on offense now with all the action before the snap and after the snap? You know, you couldn't just put him out there because then everybody knows he's getting the ball. You can't do it like once every four series. You know, but if he was out there regularly, man, he'd be a dynamo.
I think nowadays, like Cordero Patterson, you put him 7 yards deep in the backfield with a fullback or an H-back or a tight end in front of him, you never know what he could do on those outside sweeps. Create that space, like Jason said, and give him that in-space freedom. He'd be a tough tackle.
Yeah, with the spreads, J-Mac, don't you think?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, with the amount of formations that teams are using and the shifts and the motions that go along with those formations, you know, offensive coordinators are always trying to gain what we call a hat on either side of the ball. So when you split the center in half, you count the defenders on that side of that half of the center, and you count how many hats they have compared to how many hats you have. So if they have three hats and we have three hats, well, then we'll bring a guy in motion. That gives us 4-on-3, so there we've gained a competitive edge. And when you have Devin, in which you can do so many things with him in terms of, like you said, Jeff, bring him in motion, put him out there, you know, out wide, and you even use him as a decoy to take the top off the defense and then bring somebody underneath to open, you know, something underneath, you know, to that other receiver. It's just so many things and versatility that you can do with him and to continue to put stress on the defense.
You know, Jason, you think about your career, and we talked about the variety of skills that Devin Hester brought to the Bears. And then you think of another Hall of Famer like Urlacher. Because remember, there was a lot of conversation, Jeff, when Brian first came aboard. What position was he going to play? And then all of a sudden you see these guys like Devin, like Urlacher, start developing those Hall of Fame traits and then turn their career into what they ultimately became. You've really in a unique perspective to be a blocker of a middle linebacker, but then be a blocker for a Hall of Fame returner. That's pretty cool, you know, just a part of your career.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at it, like, you look at all the scouts and obviously polls and all these guys, they talk about what they look for position by position. So we've heard a number of times, you know, Coach Flews and polls talk about on the defensive side of the ball, they look for what? Length and athleticism, you know what I mean? And when you have guys that have that athleticism, they have the length, but they also have the strength to be able to, you know, do different things. If you can really plug them and put them anywhere. And when you have guys that show versatility, especially on defense, you look at the best defenses in the NFL, you have a lot of guys that can do a lot of things. Like, and I'll talk about the Ravens, right? They have safeties that can play linebacker. Then they have linebackers that can play the end. So when you look at the league now, you know, base personnel is you're going, you know, almost four wides. Well, base personnel for a defense is sub, where you have a nickel, or it could even be dime, where you have an extra defensive back. And when you have guys that are versatile, then you can stay in your base. If a team tries to go heavy, 21 personnel, if they try to run the ball out, well, you can stay in your base, your sub, because you have those safeties that are safety slash linebackers, and you have those bigger linebackers that are hybrid linebackers at the end. So it just gives you a lot of versatility to be able to match up with offenses that are bringing, you know, so many different things, complex schemes, and like we talked about, a lot of formations and shifts. It allows you to just not have to, you know, substitute a lot of different guys. It allows you to play your base because you have the versatility and those defenders that can do a lot of different things on the football field.
When it's time to tackle some game day deals, then go with the grocer who has been a part of Chicago since 1899, Jewel Osco, the official grocery store of the Chicago Bears. So I'm envisioning, the assumed next quarterback of the Bears, Caleb Williams, in the shotgun. He's got orbit motion with a receiver of unknown origin, but I'm going to say it's Devin Hester. And out on the flanks, you got DJ Moore, Keenan Allen in the slot, and DeAndre Swift is going to empty the back. I mean, a player like that with this offense could put him over the top. And then you factor in Gerald Everett and Cole Kmet. I mean, weapons galore. I think Shane Waldron is going to have one heck of a time scheming up an offense that'll threaten defenses at every blade of grass in 2024.
Yeah, it's going to be real exciting. And, you know, there was a quote, this isn't me, so I don't want to take credit for this because it's a really good quote. I think it's a really good evaluation of the two types of quarterbacks. And I can't recall who I took this from, but I think it's awesome. I even wrote it down because I really like it. But he said there's two types of quarterbacks. You're either an artist or you're a surgeon, right? And when you look at Caleb Williams, right, a surgeon is like Aaron Rodgers, right? He can dissect the defense. He may not have the athleticism to be able to run that read zone and take the ball 60 yards like we saw Justin Fields do here, you know, his entire career. But he's a surgeon because he can dissect the defense from within a pocket. He has that ability. And then you look at the artist, right? So Patrick Mahomes, I think, is a little bit of both. He's an artist, right, because he can deliver the ball off platform with different arm angles and stuff like that. But he's also a surgeon because he can dissect the defense just from sitting in a pocket. And when you talk about Caleb Williams, I think the reason why there's so many, he's going to be the number one pick and so many evaluators are calling him a generational talent is because he's a mixture of both. And he's shown that he can just sit in the pocket, play on schedule, deliver the ball on time, make the routine play, dissect the defense within the pocket. But he's also an artist because of the things that he does. I mean, I love the clip that they show in which he rolled out to his left, looked back to his right, jumped in air and threw the ball on target to a wide open receiver. Like, that's why he's an artist, because he does things that he has a skill set and he does things that the normal quarterback can't do. And I think that's why, you know, he's such a hot commodity, is because he's a mixture of all of those things. And when you have a quarterback that can be an artist and a surgeon, well, then you've got something special, because there's going to be games where you're going to have to be a surgeon, where they're going to take away your artistry to where they're not going to let you get out of the pocket and, you know, be able to influence the game with your legs and your arm talent. So, but there's games in which you're going to have to be an artist, where there's going to be an unblocked defender. You know, things are going to get muddy, where you're going to have to use your ability to create a perfect picture and put points on the board.
Ryan Poles brought that quote up. It comes from Jeff King, one of his assistant scouts. It. And I liked it that's myself, it. Jason. It was the first time I heard it. And yep. It kind of puts a lot of quarterback traits into perspective. And I was kind of thinking today, because if you look at a guy like Caleb Williams and you look at a quarterback like Dan Marino is the surgeon. He's not going to be creative with his feet. He's not going to run RPO. He's not going to be, you know, having rollouts and everything. But I think a guy like Caleb Williams offers you a lot more because of his athleticism and those magician traits, as well as the surgeon traits that he has.
Receivers are going to have to be on the ready at any moment, you know, and hopefully, and I mean, he's even said, hey, I don't want to run. I want to throw the ball. So he's going to have to rely on it sometimes, and he certainly can do that as well. But what a great moment. I think he's up at Halas Hall this week, as a matter of fact, getting his top 30 visit out of the way with the Bears. And so we'll see what comes at the end of April. One thing back to Hester real quick, because Larry Mayer's done a great job chronicling not only Devin, but Steve McMichael, head of the Hall of Fame, is the video from the war room at the time at Halas Hall with Jerry Angelo calmly and thoughtfully going up. I don't know if you saw that video, because there's a lot of I mean, still around, Jeff Shiver, Mark Sadowski, who was a big proponent and a voice for drafting Devin Hester, now with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Greg Gabriel has since retired. He was in that discussion as well, and it was just all interesting to watch that come to life and how they were going to sort this out at the wonderful number 57 pick, Tom, in round two of that 2006 draft. What did you guys think of the insight and the discussion after watching that video that is attached to the article?
Well, I like the fact that there is a lot of discussion, because if you don't have a player that's identified to having one trait that's magical, someone has to stand on that soapbox and say, this is what we can develop. This is what his possibilities are. This is what we have to explore. And I'm glad there was enough conversation in that room that it was never, oh, you know, he can only do this, or I'm not so sure he can do that. But I'm glad that there was a big topic of debate there that got his name qualified for that 57th pick in the draft.
Yeah, I loved it. You know, Chris Ballard was in that room too. And yeah, I can recall Chris Ballard sitting there saying, hey, you know, Devin Hester, you know, he's an ascending player. Like, you know, he, like, the ceiling is high for Devin, meaning that the potential is high. And I'm glad that they were able to evaluate, you know, make the evaluation in terms of, you know, guys whose floor was their college film. Like, the best that they could see them ever being is what you see in college, or where you see Devin. You know, they talked about how great he was in college, but also they felt like, you know, he had the potential and the greatness to be even better, or to keep continue to develop and get better in the pros. So, you know, I'm glad that Jerry Angelo listened to those guys about Devin, and, you know, they came to an agreement to definitely have him here in Chicago, because, you know, without a doubt, without him being on our football team back in 2006, you know, we weren't another team that went to the Super Bowl. We would have never made it without having the greatness of Devin Hester on our team.
Man, that is
his rookie year, which is crazy.
That's, you know, quite the statement, man, you just put out there right there. Would have never made this. I mean, it's that's the value of what that one man. You know, and they were, the other discussion player was Ashton Ubode. He was from Ohio State. He wound up being a third round pick, number 70 overall, in round three by the Buffalo Bills. And he had a long career, but the production wasn't there. And frankly, he's now a coach. He's from Liberia. He's a Liberian coach. So he's coaching football at the age of 39, giving back to what is a growing population of African nation players entering the NFL. We continue on with Jason McKee. We're brought to you by PNC, official bank of the Bears. So along with that discussion about Devin, Jerry Angelo, who we're going to get on the podcast here, I think, in the next week or two, he was always big on, when you draft a player, what's the plan for the player? Before we ever sign our name and enter that player into the draft, what's our plan for him? And I think that's significant, because he was big on building through the draft until the point where, okay, we got to dip in free agency. We got to go trade for Jay Cutler. Maybe that'll put us over the top again, like they did in 2006. But that is significant for an evaluation department, a general manager and his lieutenants, to have a plan and the coaching staff on board. Hey, it's going to take time to develop player A, B, and C. But player B, you know, we envision, he might be a fifth-round pick, but we envision him as a starter in year one. I mean, look at Braxton Jones. That came out of nowhere, right, at left tackle. How do you guys feel about that philosophy? Do you think it's absolutely necessary for general managers and coaches to be in sync about, okay, here's our plan, so don't be shocked if the guy struggles in year one. His ceiling, though, in year two and three are going to be, you know, how do you guys go about that? Tom, you look at it first.
I think the coaches are so big a part of developing talent. Whether you want to talk about Jason's era from Charles Tillman to Lance Briggs, if you want to look at my era, taking Mark Bort, so all Big Ten defensive tackle, in Dick Stanfeld, turning him into an all-pro offensive guard, a free agent out of college, Jay Hilgenberg, and turning him into a seven-time Pro Bowler. So I think position coaches are enormous in the overall success, development, and production of players that you may be looking at from the scouting department. But, okay, eventually we're going to hand these guys over to a group of coaches. Now, what are they capable of doing with the talents that we see that we're going to offer our team.
Yeah, Tom hit it on the head. Like, the biggest thing in the NFL in terms of, you know, having consistent success year in and year out is developing talent. And if you don't have the coaches that can develop talent, then you're not going to win consistently. And you only get so many picks in the draft, right? We see the Bears, we don't have a lot of picks. So the development of the players that we have, but also the players that you bring in terms of development, you have to make sure that you have the right coaches and position coach in place. And I always say this, you know, I feel like the position coach is more important than the head coach, because the head coach, he's going to be around the team as a whole. He's going to be the overseer. But at the end of the day, it's the position coaches that are in the meetings. They're doing the individual drills. They're making sure that they're honing on the fundamentals to help develop these players. And another thing that can help accelerate the development of a player is having good veterans in that position group as well. And we saw that with Jalen Johnson. You know, I think going back and looking at training camp, every time that I saw Terrell Smith or Tyreek Stevenson come off the field, they went over to Jalen Johnson. They were talking. Even after practice, you saw those guys staying after practice with Jalen Johnson. So Jalen Johnson, you know, having a good veteran that is up to developing, you know, young rookie talent or, you know, lower end guys, helping aid that development with those guys is huge as well. So, you know, it's huge when you have a guy that you can bring in from a scout that fits the profile in terms of height, weight, speed that you're looking for at that position. But if you don't have the coaches, but also the guys in that position group that help speed up that development, then that player is not going to be successful. And we see it all the time. Like, you know, that team up north, right, they lost Devontae Adams. And, you know, we're looking at Jordan Love at quarterback. We're saying, well, who's he going to throw to, right? And then that last game, you know, we saw it firsthand because we called the game. Jordan Love's throwing to this guy. He's throwing to that guy. We're like, where did that guy come from? This guy was a fifth rounder. This guy was a fourth rounder. This guy was on practice squad. Well, you got a receiver coach that's really developed those receivers, but not only developed them, he's got them ready. So that way, when their opportunity presents itself, they literally took it and they take it and run with it.
I personally, Tommy, am you know, I'm big on having a young football team building through the draft and whatnot, but with a number one pick at quarterback at 22, having guys like Keenan Allen now, having DJ Moore, having some other veterans into the mix that have been through the ropes a little bit to help him adjust and help him understand what they need as well to make him a better quarterback, I think is now it is critical. I was impressed with Jordan Love did as a first time starter with that group of receivers, no question about it. So that was done a little differently, but again, he'd been there 3 years, so it's not like 22-year-old just jumping into the mix here. While he had great success at Oklahoma and USC, you know, that don't you think that's going to help ease the transition, especially in the first half of the season?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, when you look at having two talented tight ends, having two wide receivers with the reputation of DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, look at what DeAndre Swift and the rest of the running back room brings aboard. But I'm going to say this, and it may aggravate the both of you guys. If we don't start talking about the offensive line more,
oh, I know,
it doesn't matter who is on the exterior of the offense or behind the line of scrimmage. So as much as we want to sit here and sell tickets,
yep,
we got to sit here and talk about the guys that are going to show up day in and day out. And listen, I think they have – we just talked about the coach and how important he is in the development of players. They're very fortunate to have Chris Morgan, because he's a hell of an offensive line coach. And so, again, leading up to the draft, man, there's going to be all these guys coming out, and they're going to show what their suit looks like. They're going to get a big hug from Roger Goodell. But ultimately, this team is going to be decided on the offense and defensive line. So
is that where we're all going here at number nine, somebody on the line of scrimmage? Because that's where I'm leaning if I were making that decision. It's easy for me to say.
Line of scrimmage.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Give me the best of what can offer Montez Sweat some assistance on the opposite side. Give me a guy that can be a bookend tackle with Darnell Wright or other position that you see fit for a generation.
Yep.
So, yeah, and again, it's fun to have all this conversation. And, yes, Caleb Williams and his development is super important. But, you know, when McMahon came aboard the Bears, he came in here with the confidence to be able to work hard and help develop this football team. And I think that's the same mentality Caleb Williams needs to come into about coming in here and help developing the offense of this football team.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tom. Like, there's a lot of guys walking around that are 6'6" plus, over 300 pounds, right? But there's not a lot of guys that big that can absorb force on a bull rush, right? Or be able to move his feet and be able to pass protect, right? There's not a lot of guys like that. And there's not a lot of depth in the NFL, right? So when you look at teams, right, they'll have their five starters or their two tackles. But when those tackles get hurt, there's no depth. There's no depth. And that's when the teams struggle. And then that's when their seasons go down the drain, right? And everybody wants everything to look good. Like, everybody wants that Ferrari. We want to have the DJ Moore. We want to have the Keenan Allen, right? The Ferrari looks good. It's got all the bells and whistles. But guess what? If you don't have the right gas in that Ferrari, right, the gas that runs the Ferrari, the offensive lineman that runs the offense, well, guess what? That Ferrari can be in the shop. You know, give me the old Cadillac. Give me the offensive line that's going to be reliable. So I know whatever route concept I call, whatever protection scheme that I call, I'm confident enough that my quarterback's going to have enough time to execute. He'll have time to be able to make his read, go through his progression, and deliver that ball to a Keenan Allen or DJ Moore, because we put a premium. We've got the right gasoline, you know, in our offense, which is the offensive line. So, you know, I'm looking to the offensive line, but like Tom said, the defensive line as well. You know, in this defense, if you're not getting pressure with that front four, well, guess what? You're not going to be successful, because you put pressure, all the pressure on that secondary. So, you know, either offense or defensive line, it all starts up front. So that's where I'm leaning in terms of that ninth overall pick as well.
Vizzy Hard Seltzer, flavors for every vibe. Celebrate responsibly. Molson Coors Beverage Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And game day snacking calls for good foods. Chunky guacamole made with Haas avocados, tomatoes, onions, cilantro, and a squeeze of lime juice. Score some today at your local grocery store. Game day is guac day. Wrapping up with J-Mac, I asked him politely, 20 minutes. We've gone 40. Thank you, brother, because we enjoy talking to you for sure. Yeah. What are you lifting these days? What's your bench?
Man, you know what? we had workouts this morning. I don't do nothing heavy no more. I just, you know, I have my lower day, my upper day, and today was a lower day. You know, the kids, we had our morning workouts, and right after that, I got a chance to lift. And, you know, the kids, they get out early today, so they'll be back in the weight room. But I'm just trying to stay healthy, man. I'm trying to get to that number you mentioned to start the broadcast at 247. I start getting heavy, man, traveling with you guys. You know, all we do is eat, and they got all the friends in the stadium, man. I got to stop, man. I'm gonna be that tackle pretty soon. But the difference is, I'm not 6'6". I'm like 5'11", 6'2". I'm gonna be a real wide bookend tackle in a little bit.
Well, he hides it well, Tom, because he looks jacked up. Look at the shoulders on Jason McKee. All right. Well, we appreciate the time, brother, and we look forward to year two together on the broadcast, and it's going to be an eventful season. We got a lot of road trips, obviously, this year. We got the Hall of Fame. We got London coming up. That'll be a great experience as well. And Tottenham, as we just saw on the Bears website and Twitter, Tremaine Edmonds being an ambassador for the Bears over there in London, getting things going and getting started. So it's going to be a fun ride, beginning within a couple weeks, the NFL draft. Tastes like Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. That's going to wrap us up. For Tom and Jason McKee, I'm Jeff Joniak. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please subscribe now on the Chicago Bears official app, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Bear down, everybody. Thanks for listening.